online. Otherwise, you can call our operators, 212-209-2950. They are waiting for you, and we are waiting for you, because without listener support, WBAI will cease to exist. It's just that simple. We have to clear our arrears at the tower, because at the end of 2 months, if we haven't paid up, they'll throw us out, and we'll be off the air. I don't know how much more leeway we have in Brooklyn at our studios, but 3 months behind is not a good thing. We've got to catch up. We've got to make it up. We can only do that, excuse me, with support from our listening audience. That's you. So if you're waiting for education at the crossroads, well, why not? While you're waiting, while the theme is on, make a call of support to keep WBAI on the air. 212-209-2950, the number to call. We're waiting for you. We need you. Each and every one of you needs to make that call to keep WBAI on the air. And now, Education at the Crossroads with Basir and Chowie.
Arizagioni, good evening. Welcome once again to Education at the Crossroads. My name is Basir Mchawi. It is Thursday evening, and well, we're back. I can't say we're here all the time because it's been 3 weeks since Education at the Crossroads has been on. We were first preempted for the initial hearing that took place in early June. Then after the January 6th hearing, let me be specific. Then last week we were preempted because of the normal four-week fundraising preemption that takes place for just about every program on WBAI. That is to prevent us from going into the long, long, drawn-out sessions of fundraising, which we know actually goes ahead and turns listeners and watches off. When we talk about watches, we say, well, at this point for this first segment, we're going to be actually streaming on Facebook Live. You can go to Education at the Crossroads and you can see us. You can see us on the radio, which for many people is an experience because so many people are used to listening to radio and not seeing radio. But, well, this is what technology has done. Technology, but not only technology, but unfortunately COVID, because we're still broadcasting remotely and we're using whatever technology we have available to actually go ahead and assist us. We're doing several things this evening. Our first segment is we're going to be talking about the Co-op City African American Association, Co-op City, one of the largest housing developments in the United States in the North Bronx, not far from where I live, where I reside. Then we're going to be talking about a health fair that's taking place in downtown Brooklyn, sponsored by Community Board 2. After that, we're going to be talking about the primaries. The primaries in New York State have been really kind of upended. There are two sets of primaries, one next week and another in August. And we're going to talk about that because so many people don't even know that the primaries are occurring. Finally, we're going to have a segment with Bernard White. Many of you may be familiar with that name, Bernard White. Those of you who've been listening to WBAI for a while, he's going to be talking about a virtual reparations program that's going to be taking place this weekend. So we got a lot of ground to cover. First, we have from the African American Association, Co-op City African American Association, we have Sister Reva Jones, and we have her guest, Dr. Daniel Black. So you're here. First of all, just talk a little bit about the African American Association there in Co-op City, this large, as I said, housing development, which over the years has become greater concentration, more and more people of color, you know, especially Black and brown people, you know, in Co-op City. So tell us about the Co-op City African American Association.
Okay. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here on the Education at the Crossroads. And the African American Association started at about 1970. And I'm a former president, and I think we have another former president on, but our current president, Michelle Marbury, had an emergency and she could not be here. And we created several programs. We have an annual holistic health fair, and we have an annual spelling bee that we sponsor, and we joined other groups to have an annual Kwanzaa celebration in December. And we support a lot of the organizations that want to have dance groups and things like that. And we have study groups and those sorts of things. And we've had Dr. Black here in our community before, and he presented the coming. He wrote this book, The Coming. The Coming, and he made a very good presentation of it, and we have him here today, and I'll let him go on and give you more information on himself.
Well, okay, yes, Dr. Black.
Yes, I appreciate being here. Thank you all so much for having me, and I'm happy to be here today. I'm here today to talk about my newest release, Don't Cry For Me, if everybody can see it there. Yes. Don't Cry For Me is a book about a beautiful, wonderful, dying Black father and his relationship with his only begotten son. The point of the book is this dying Black father, he writes a series of letters hoping to explain to his dying gay son why he treated him the way he did, why he treated his mother the way he did, how manhood and ideas of masculinity changed from one generation to the next, how he inherited a definition of manhood and masculinity, which absolutely clashed with the way in which his son defined those terms. And it's about how these two generations of Black men, if you will, come to terms with these ideals, but how this father has to, for all practical purposes, confess that he wounded his son. He wounded him. He hurt him and he wounded him. And now he's trying to figure out how to heal him before he becomes ancestral. And the book is about the father desperately seeking for how many ways can you say I'm sorry? How do you heal an old wound? How do you leave a son with enough knowledge and enough information so that he doesn't spend a lifetime hating his father? That's what this book is about. And it's also about the ways in which the father comes to understand that as a black boy growing up in rural Arkansas in the 1940s, he was so unbelievably limited, and how the culture was in fact limited, how our imagination was just as enslaved as our bodies. And because of that, there are ways we parented that absolutely bruised our children, but that's not what we meant, but it is what we did. Even things like, you know, the age old kind of almost mantra that we hear that black parents tell children to go and do better than me. That's really a very insulting thing for a parent to say. But so many of us as parents have said exactly that. Because if our children are to do better than us, who are their examples? Who should they follow? Who should their heroes be, if not us? And to invite our children to find heroes other than us is to send our children away from us and to set up standards of excellence that are not black. And so this book is about the ways in which black families have suffered from the limitations under which slavery left us. And there's a short excerpt I'm going to read to us.
Sure.
When in 2013, my father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I knew what it meant. He'd soon forget what he'd said or done to me over the years. In fact, he'd need my sympathy, perhaps my financial assistance, as his memory faded away. I saw in my mind my father leaning over a legal pad, writing as best he could, something very painful, something very private, that couldn't wait another day. This book is what he had to say. My father grew up at a time when black children meant nothing to America. Most of them, including him, didn't have a birth certificate. Their care, their education, their self-worth was optional. Whether they lived or died was insignificant to the state. For the most part, their existence centered around work and church. This is the world that shaped my father's consciousness. In his old age, he retired from his job as a mechanic, and the state informed Daddy that he needed a birth certificate if he was to draw Social Security. He told the state he didn't have one. They told him, well, get one, make it up. If you don't know your birthday, just choose a day. I was horrified at the arbitrary nature of his life. Only then did I understand his harsh, insensitive demeanor. In some ways, he envied the life he had provided for his children. He too had wanted knowledge, travel, enlightenment, but such was laughable for a dark black boy in the 1940s. So he hoped for me. Yet my freedom angered him. It made me question his world, his convictions, his God. After college, I wanted nothing to do with his idea of manhood. He wanted no parts of my fluidity. We were never united in our hearts again. Yet once Alzheimer's took Daddy's mind and softened his boldness, I discovered a man who was more than a field plow. Daddy wanted what I wanted, to mean something to somebody, to make a difference in the world, to be admired for the man he was. But we never achieved that mutual clarity. So this book, this record of a poor black father's appeal, is what any dying daddy might say to his son. More than anything, I want readers to reconsider the capacity of our father's hearts. Many of them were handed so little, yet we expected so much. They gave more than they had, but less than we needed. They were burdened with a notion of manhood that destroyed so many, many of them. But if they'd been allowed to dream, they might have expected sons who were not carbon copies of themselves. They might have imagined boys in all their glory dancing before the world without shame. They might have granted even a queer son permission and affirmation to be himself. regardless of the world's reaction. They might have known that some spirits come into the world to disrupt normalcy and thereby create space for the despised and the rejected. And they might have understood finally that every son is an eternal blessing if they'd been allowed to dream.
Now, let me just ask you a question in regards to the book. Is this a dialogue between father and son that takes place over a period of time?
No, it's a series of letters from the father to the son.
Okay.
All of the entire book is composed of letters, but all of the letters are from the father to the son.
Mm-hmm.
The son's response we'll learn in the next book.
Okay. All right. So you have a plan in regards to this.
That's right.
This is a series as opposed to a singular work.
That's right. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I must let you know how much I enjoyed it. I just finished it yesterday.
And
it gives so much history and depth.
Yes, ma'am.
And feeling. Oh, my goodness. Really. I hope everybody gets to read it.
Mm-hmm. Now, where is the book available?
Absolutely everywhere. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, everywhere books are sold, you can get it.
Okay. And the title, once again, is?
Don't Cry for Me.
And the author is?
Daniel Black.
Mm-hmm. So, Sister Reva, when was Dr. Black in Co-op City?
It must have been it's before the pandemic, so it must have been at least four or five years ago.
Okay.
That's right. I was there for the Kwanzaa celebration.
So yes. That was with a previous book.
Yes, The Coming.
The Coming.
The Coming is deep. It's very moving. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I hope everybody has read that. That's been out for a while.
The Coming is a day-by-day, in some instances, hour-by-hour account of life during the Middle Passage.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, Sister Reva, does the association have any plans for any new events or anything like that?
Well, we're planning for our Kwanzaa celebration. That's not till December, but I think that's the only thing we have that's coming up anytime soon. But I'll keep you posted if we do have something else.
All right. Well, one thing very clearly is that, it appears that, the COVID pandemic is letting up a little bit. It's not when it was when we were first introduced to it. That's for sure. No matter what.
Yeah.
So, there are more opportunities for in-person events. And then, of course, we still have the technology that we can use here. So, we can have events virtually or in person at this particular time. So,
anybody's welcome to join our dance class. We have a line dance class that meets once a week, and we have a belly dance class, and those are good things that people can join. And to join the African American Association, our address is the African American Association, P.O. Box 702, Bronx, New York 10475. So we welcome everybody to join. It's only $15 and $25 for a family.
Okay.
So you're welcome.
Give that address one more time slowly so people can go ahead and get it.
The address is Post Office Box 702, Co-op City Station, Bronx, New York, 10475.
Okay. And that is the Co-op City African American Association.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I'd like to say thank you for spending some time with us, Dr. Black. Again, I can't keep up with all these books. There's so many books that are coming out now. But that's two right there. The first one, The Coming, which sounds interesting, of course. And then this latest one, Don't Cry for Me.
Yes.
So that's Daniel Black.
Right.
One book is The Coming. And the latest book is Don't Cry for Me.
Yes.
All right. So I would like to say Asante Sana to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Take care.
Definitely good. to have you on. Right now, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to be talking about an event that's taking place in downtown Brooklyn at Commodore Barry Park. Now, Commodore Barry Park may be familiar to some of you because it is the site of the International African-American, is the International African Arts Festival that takes place at Commodore Barry Park. And as a matter of fact, that will be taking place starting next week on July 1st. But this Saturday, on the 25th, there's going to be a health fair that's held at Commodore Barry Park. And it is sponsored by the local community board, Community Board 2. So we're going to be speaking with two representatives of the community board. We're going to be talking to Brandon Smith and Latrell, and they're going to be telling us about this health fair. And it's something that, well, people need to come out to, because the idea of health is one that, especially, I think that COVID exposed many of the weaknesses within the American healthcare system. And it exposed so, it was obviously when the pandemic first set in, we could say that it was catastrophic because it affected certain communities, our communities, in a lot more devastating manner than it affected other communities. And for that reason, we have to pay further attention to our health. And of course, well, we need to continue to go ahead and do that. So what's happening now is Max Schmid, do we have our guest on the phone line?
Not quite yet.
Okay, you're working on it. We give, since we're broadcasting remotely, we give our engineers at WBAI a lot more multitasking to do during our programs, which are live. So it's it comes out as being quite interesting, quite a task sometimes for the engineers to keep up with everything that we have to do. So as an example, this evening, I've got four segments. We finished the first one. We've got three more segments that we want to attempt to try to do. And it's going to be Max Schmid, the engineer this evening, who's going to be going ahead and connecting Education at the Crossroads with the guests that are coming up. So hopefully they're in place.
We have
they know what they're supposed to do. And as such, if that's the case, then it will make the life of our engineer, Max Schmid, a little bit easier. While I'm waiting, I would like to say that you may have heard about the Transmitter Fund and a restoration of the drive to go ahead and raise some money at WBAI. WBAI, as you know, is a listener-sponsored radio station, and as such, we depend on you for your support. So you can go ahead and support us by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950, and make a donation at any level. Anything would be appreciated. $10, $15, $25, $2,000, whatever you have available, just to go ahead and help WBAI survive. The other thing you can do is, if you wish a gift for your contribution, you can go to the website Give, G-I-V-E, the number 2, WBAI.org, and you can actually get a premium, a gift for your donation to WBAI. Then some of you may be are interested in becoming what we call a sustaining member. And a sustaining member has been coined at WBAI, the buddy, a WBAI buddy. You can do so by pledging a minimum of $25 a month, which will come out of your checking account, savings account, credit card account. It can be electronic funds transfer, however you go ahead and determine that it will be done. And for this continuing sustaining donation of $25 or more, you become a BAI buddy. Anyway, we're hoping that you out there will continue to support WBAI. Max, we have any folks?
They're all here.
Okay. All right. So on the line with us now, we have Brandon Smith of Community Board 2 and also Latrell of Community Board 2. Good evening to both of you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Okay. So we want to hear about the health fair. First of all, just tell us, why did Community Board 2 want to be involved in this important aspect of our lives, which is that concerning health and our health, our well-being? Brandon, why don't you go ahead and start with that?
Yeah, thanks so much for the question. We have always had a great interest in health for the local community at Community Board 2, and particularly in the Health, Environment, Social Services Committee, where I'm the chair and Latrell is a member. We have, for the last year or two, been focused quite a bit on presenting local issues related to health, whether it be issues about diabetes, asthma, or maternal health, very common health issues that come up at our committee meetings, which are held on a monthly basis, back before COVID at the Brooklyn Hospital, but we've been doing it on Zoom ever since, the first Wednesday of every month. And what we wanted to do here was take these educational aspects of health, things that we've been discussing at committee meetings with interested members of the public who come, and bring it out to the community for a big event where community members can come down, experience some of the health services for themselves, get treatment for different kinds of things that are very common, get blood pressure checks, get the opportunity to maybe get something checked out or learn something more about something they might be wondering about in the area of health. And what we came up with was a plan. So this Saturday, June 25th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., down at the handball court, a multipurpose area on the corner of Flushing Avenue and Navy Street in Commodore Barry Park, we're going to be having our first ever inaugural health fair. This is an event we're planning alongside the Brooklyn Hospital and the Friends of Commodore Barry Park, our sponsors and partners in this event. And it's going to be an all-day experience where folks can come out. There'll be a raffle. There'll be healthy free food. There'll be water. There'll be all kinds of different services like yoga and then all these informational materials being distributed about things that you might not know so much about, you know, whether it be sickle cell, whether it be diabetes, whether it be dermatology. We're going to have all kinds of information about how to get insured. And in the middle of the day, we're going to have a panel discussion with experts speaking about maternal health. And anybody who comes to this event, which will be at 12 noon, right in the middle of our fair, will get an expert education about what's been going on with maternal health, why people of color experience such drastic negative health outcomes, what we can do about it, and what people can do in the community to learn more and ensure that they get the best prenatal health if they're an expectant mother. So we're going to have elected officials speaking. We're going to have all kinds of special events. There'll be events for children, like a story time for the kids from the Brooklyn Public Library. There'll be a puppet show that our partners, the Friends of Commodore Barry Park, will be putting together, face painting and all kinds of things that people can do to get involved, have a great day. The weather's going to be great, so it's going to be a really fun event. Again, this is Saturday, June 25th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You know, I'm happy to answer any questions, but that's really the nature of it. It's going to be a great experience where people can come out, where they can be with their family, where they can get some free goodies from different providers and learn more about health and their local community options for getting better health care. That's our main goal, trying to give people better health care by coming out to this event.
Okay. Latrell, this event is going to be taking place between two relatively large public housing complexes, Farragut Houses, and, well, three, really, Fort Greene and then Whitman Ingersoll. How do you see the importance of having this health fair in this particular area of Brooklyn?
I think it's very important to help support our community in public housing. This is going to be the first time ever health fair, as Brandon said, that's come into the community from community board to in this area. We have other different events in the, you know, in the area, but this is the first time. We also have Ingersoll, like you said, Ingersoll Houses, Farragut Houses, Walt Whitman, the Eagle Building is right there. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to help educate the community on the different areas to reinforce on sickle cell, diabetes, the importance of skin care with, you know, the summer right around the corner, you know, to make sure you moisturize and put the sunblock on. Also, we're going to have emergency management to come out to teach us what to do in case of emergency. You know, we just went through COVID. COVID was a, you know, a serious issue for everybody. We're going to be giving take-home tests to help the community to be, you know, prepared, to help them be prepared in different areas. So in case of any other serious emergencies take place. So this is going to be a very important event for the community.
Okay. All right. We'd like to remind everyone you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. We are streaming live at WBAI.org, WBAI.org. This is Education at the Crossroads. I am Basir M. Chawi. And right now we're talking to two members of Community Board 2 about a health fair that's going to be taking place this Saturday at Commodore Barry Park. Now, many people may be familiar with Commodore Barry Park because it is the site of several major events that take place annually. It is the site of the International African Arts Festival, the current site. It's been so since 2004. And since that time, the Afropunk organization has decided to go ahead and use Commodore Barry Park as well. So if you're familiar with the International African Arts Festival or Afropunk, then you know where this health fair is going to be taking place. Is there any way for people to get further information regarding this health fair? Because, you know, some people are familiar with Commodore Barry Park, as I said, and many people may not be. But this is something I think that is especially important for the surrounding communities. As we, you know, we talked about the public housing, but also, of course, we've got expanding communities, the Fort Greene community in general, the Dumbo community, which is also very close to Commodore Barry Park. And we would encourage people from those neighborhoods, those communities to come out as well. How can people get further information?
Well, you can reach out to me. Sorry.
Of course, you can reach out to the community board office, which is always here to answer any sort of issues that might come up or questions from the community. Their phone number is 718-596-5401, and their email is bk02@cb.nyc.gov.
Okay, you want to give that again one more time, slowly?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sorry I speak a little bit fast.
Well, listen, you know, radio is just a little different. We speak fast when we're in conversation generally, and I know this is so conversational that sometimes people just think, well, you know, I can talk as fast as I normally talk on the radio. But for certain things, you know, you have to go ahead and give it slowly so people can get their pens and pencils or whatever and write this information down.
Absolutely. I can appreciate that. It's 718-596-5401. And the email address is BK, just like the borough where we live, Brooklyn, BK02@CB for Community Board dot NYC dot GOV, gov.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that makes sense. But the Community Board office is a city agency who's primarily charged with running the operations of our function, and and absolutely respond to any questions that folks may have about our event and any of the exciting things that we're going to be offering there.
Right. You know, as I was telling you, Brandon, I'm quite familiar with Community Board too, because when the International African Arts Festival moved to Commodore Barry Park back in 2004, I was the chair of the festival, and we had to work very closely with the Community Board in regards to going ahead and making that successful relocation from Bedford-Stuyvesant into downtown Brooklyn. And as we said earlier, that the festival will be starting the week after this particular health fair in Commodore Barry Park. So this is actually a time for people to go ahead and get ready. You can come to the health fair and get ready for the International African Arts Festival the following week. Littrell, why don't you tell people why you think it's so important for them to come out to this particular health fair?
Well, I think it's very important to come out. Like Brandon said, we're going to have a lot of different things going on. Different vendors are going to come out. We have Brooklyn Hospital. We have Metro Plus, Metro Health First. We're going to have Sequel Cell. We're going to have a lot of different things going on. I'm going to reinforce the Brooklyn Public Library is coming out. We're going to have a puppet show for kids. Wegmans is participating. We're going to do healthy eating tables, yoga. It's going to be so many different things going on. And, you know, if you don't have anything to do on Saturday, if you want to have, an hour or two, just stop by to see what's going on. Please tell a friend. Please, it's on social media. It's a very important event, and I think it's going to be very helpful and inciting to anybody who come out. And it's going to be so much to learn. And you're going to take back something to share with. I know whenever I go to an event like the African Sweet Festival, you spoke about, I always learn, get good information, and I could bring back and share. And everything that on Saturday is going to be free. Just come out. We're going to have a big bag donated by Trophy World that you can put all your goodies in that you receive from all the vendors, and you can just, you know, enjoy yourself. So it's going to be a very important event for everybody to come out.
Okay.
And a lot of good information. Good.
Yeah, sounds good. And I definitely will come out. You know, I've been attempting to work a little bit with Community Board, too, and across to trying to pull this off. So right now, those of you out in the WBAI listening audience, we want you to spread the word about this health fair. Come on out to the Community Board 2 sponsored health fair this Saturday. That's June 25th from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Okay.
And your health is very important to you. So if you want to come out and learn about things to take care of your health, this is a place to be on Saturday.
Hey, listen, as we used to say, if you don't have health, you don't have anything. So,
and there's going to be a DJ if you like the music.
Okay, music as well. Yes. Great.
Yes, DJ Debonair from Farragut. He grew up in Farragut Houses, and he's going to be there to perform for us.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. I'd like to thank you, Brandon Smith and Littrell, for your work in regards to this health fair, your continuing work in regards to Community Board 2. And we will see you on Saturday. I will come on out, at least for a little while, to see what's going on. And we'll try to communicate with WBAI from there, doing a couple of, you know, what we call drops, you know, to let people know who are listening to WBAI what's happening at the health fair. So thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
All right, you're very
thank
welcome.
You.
Take care now. So next up, we've got to talk about the primaries. And that is something, the primaries are happening and people do not even know that primaries are taking place. As we speak, there is at this time early voting that's going on. We have early voting that's taking place, but I'm pretty certain that the numbers are going to be low because there's a great deal of confusion about the primaries. Instead of one primary, which originally we were supposed to have, we now have two primaries. We've got a statewide primary that's going ahead and taking place this coming Tuesday, and early voting has already started. And then in August, we're going to have a congressional primary because, as many of you know, that the congressional lines have been done over, redrawn, and there are some strange and bizarre kinds of configurations of congressional districts, which, well, I guess we'll be talking about between now and August. But right now, we want to get somebody who's involved in the election process, primaries. One of the things you know is that there are several states that wish to go ahead and restrict voting rights. Now, this is very interesting. You know, we go ahead today and the Supreme Court rules that, well, we should have less restrictions in regards to the Second Amendment. But when it comes to voting, they say, well, we need to have more restrictions in regards to voting. So now this is very interesting. And, you know, very often there are people who go ahead and look at the Second Amendment as sacrosanct. But let's look at the other amendments. Let's look at 1 through 10, just the Bill of Rights, as it's called, and then look at some of the other amendments that to the Constitution that have occurred, especially impacting many of us, are the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. Matter of fact, interestingly enough, in the Supreme Court decision today, the 14th Amendment was actually quoted because, you know, in terms of dealing with due process of law, you know, that is part of the 14th Amendment. But we'll be talking about what the Supreme Court did and many other things as we move forward next week and weeks beyond, because there is literally so much to talk about. The January 6th hearings, we can talk about that as well. What in the world is going to happen? Is Donald Trump going to be indicted? Is he going to be charged? Obviously, there are criminal activities that are going on. RICO could be used in regards to going ahead and looking at the racketeering, the conspiracy and racketeering that's actually been going on within the United States government for quite some time. Now, it's interesting because RICO is used. It was originally supposedly to be used against organized crime, but it is now often used against gangs and young people, using social media very often to criminalize people who say things on social media, but in many instances take absolutely no actions. Numbers of cases of this that have happened historically where RICO federal law is used to go ahead and criminalize these young people. It's happened in the Bronx. It's happened in Chicago. It's happened in a number of other cities. It happened again, as a matter of fact, I think earlier this year in New York City once again. But we have to go ahead and look at how this particular law is applied, when it's applied, where it's applied, and to whom it's applied. Next up, we should have M. Saidia McLaughlin, WBAI producer, the person who was responsible for the Sports Qualified sports show, which came on Sunday evening, not on currently, but well, we'll see. It may actually be back. So we're looking to see if M. Saidia is on the phone. She is engaged with the Board of Elections at this particular time, and hopefully she can talk to us. Is M. Saidia, is she on the line?
Yes, she is, and waiting.
Okay. Couldn't tell. Can't see.
Okay.
Well, go ahead.
Well, early voting started June 17th. It ends on the 26th because it's 9 days. And what is early voting? Early voting is a process by which to get more and more people to engage in coming out to vote and to vote early in case they have, you know, problems getting off work, because ultimately some places do not allow people to take off time to go vote. And when folks are in a financial situation whereby it's either to vote or to go to work, they usually choose to go to work. But ultimately, if you get out to vote, maybe we can change some things about having that happen. And so in some cases, New York City has provided for people who work to take off 2.5 hours and not be penalized in terms of their pay so that they can vote. The other thing is there's a call to nationalize Election Day or make it a federal holiday, for every year so that people can get take off work and vote. So what we have are designated sites that are a conglomeration of many election districts. As you know, redistricting has caused people to get a different number for their election district of their particular assembly district. What happened as a result of us losing an elector because certain people didn't fill out census reports in New York, it was 87 people. So now they had to reconfigure districts. And so you have districts like Park Slope connected to Staten Island as being one district. And what happened was the Democrats went and redistricted, but they did it in the same manner as the Republicans did. And what happened then is now the court threw that out because whatever the Republicans did one way to undo that, the Democrats did it. And now the Democrats are at fault because now it's illegal. Okay. So there are certain sites that are conglomerates whereby votes, people come in, they vote, and but it's considered, it won't be tallied until June 28th, which is the particular day. This year, for the June 28th, people in New York will be voting for the governor, the lieutenant governor, state assembly, judges, and party positions, as in what we call district leaders. So, most people who normally go to one site regularly on June 28th will do not necessarily go to the same site during the 9 days before. What happens? People don't turn out, and people don't think that the off years, like 22, anything that's not presidential, is not important. But the opposition knows because they have built stuff up on the local levels, as the orange halo did. In terms of you got to appoint judges, you appoint, you know, various people to be in place for certain kinds of things to enforce the law. Now, what is the law? Well, I guess the law is whatever is written. And as you know, there's some laws that are being contested right now, even around gun control, whether or not we should suppress the vote. And voter suppression has happened, particularly in communities where there's a growing number of people who have normally been marginalized to have access to voting. And as witnessed in the Biden campaign, more people came out to vote. So as a result, places, various jurisdictions now said, well, now you got to have an ID. And in order to get an ID, you got to pay a certain amount of money. And if you pay a certain amount of money, you'll begin to vote. But then your voting site gets moved. So it can make it very hard for people who don't have the ability to travel or don't know or haven't kept up with the changing places of where to vote, so they are confused. That's one thing. In New York City, based on what Donald Trump claimed in terms of a lot of people voted by absentee or mail-in, which, by the way, the president engaged in mail-in voting because he doesn't go. People who work over state, out of state, but in other countries, they mail in their ballots. So you don't get the numbers as readily on the night of any election day night, but what they do is they trickle in. So usually the voters confirmed sometime before December. In New York City, there is a new law. The new law is if you request an absentee ballot at any time, even if you didn't use it, when you go to the poll site, you will now have to vote by affidavit. What does that mean? Well, that means that if you got an absentee ballot, chances are you voted. So eliminate your duplicating your vote or voting twice. That affidavit process will be enacted so that later on they will check the records later of whether or not you did vote by absentee. And if you didn't vote, even though you got the absentee, then the affidavit form will be used as your vote. But what happens if the affidavit ballot isn't filled out properly or the envelope, or if you change your party and didn't change it in your registration, then your vote may not be counted. Sometimes people get confused with certain forms if you don't know about it. But there's not been enough outreach on all the parties that have been responsible for ensuring that every American votes gets that information in time. And it has created enormous enormous problems because, well, with redistricting now, your district has changed. If you went, if you voted in the 33rd district of the 33rd assembly district, district of the 52nd AD, well, your number of your AD has changed. So in a case, you'll get a card in the mail, you know, the fast tag, telling you that the numbers have changed. Well, people don't, thinking that the numbers have changed, think that poll sites have changed. So then they go to this poll site thinking that they can vote here during early voting, which is not the same site that they vote in during regular voting. So sometimes they don't know which way to go. And then when they finally do get to where they're going, they may not even be sure of who's running for what, okay? This is a primary that also includes people voting for Republican lieutenant governor, governor, party judges, and party affiliates, and also Democrats voting for the same, you know, party leadership. But sometimes people think it's just Democrats only. No, it's both Republicans and Democrats. So that might be confusing to people as to whether or not, oh, no, well, it's only a Democratic Party primary, so I'm not going out because I don't vote. Or, and whether you're Democrat or Republican, you can vote for any party. So people are just confused. Yeah, and in terms of confusion, people may make the wrong decisions. They may not even know which one to vote for. And they also know that whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you can vote for anybody. You see, but people are not, party leadership is going through changes in all the boroughs, and especially in Brooklyn. Some people have resigned for one position and not, and then now they had to have somebody, you know, do a runoff. We had a special election because of what happened, that somebody in the city council resigned, went to the state. Somebody else that was in the state decided to come to the city council. Different people. Now they represent district, this district, not that district. It's just confusing.
Yeah. Now, along those lines, in terms of being confusing, you would think that the Board of Elections, the League of Women Voters, and other organizations like that would be sending out or making some information available to people. But I have seen no sustained advertising kind of, I guess you would say, campaign, other than the campaigns that people who are running for political office are actually going ahead and mounting.
And let's not forget, COVID has put a major restriction on people coming out and going. But the Board of Elections has instituted certain precautionary measures so that they can maintain COVID restrictions for poll workers and for voters. A voter does not have to wear a mask, but a poll worker does. And then sometimes poll workers may feel uncomfortable about a person coming in that doesn't wear a mask. Yeah. And then some people realize, well, I don't have to wear a mask, and they could, you know, they get frustrated because they may go to the wrong table because they're used to voting at a particular table because they have identified at a particular table a particular person. So that's a complete issue.
Yeah, it's a mess.
To solve. But now, it all stems from people putting out information earlier, and those who have put out information earlier usually are a different class and caste than regular people in the communities who their district leaders have not given them the proper information. Maybe they may not be watching TV because they're frustrated with all the crazy stuff that's going on, financial issues, family issues, what time to go, where do I go, will I be treated a certain kind of way? It's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to look at we've got these states that are attempting to try to go ahead and deal with restrictive voting laws. And as I said earlier, if people are looking at the Second Amendment as being non-restricted and you shouldn't be able to restrict it, then you should not be able to go ahead and restrict the right to vote.
The Second Amendment is not the only thing that we should be concerned about.
Of course not. Not at all.
They hear this preponderance of violence on the, you know, TV and not looking at other things, you know?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we've had the experience now, you know, during the Trump years of, you know, all of this all of these falsities coming out about voting and voter fraud, it's made it easier for folks who want to stop black and brown people and progressive people from voting to go ahead and institute measures which restricts their right to vote. And we know that this is all fraudulent. It's literally criminal. And, well, listen, you know, the Department of Justice is going to have to do something about it.
New York City decided in a referendum on a proposal that was last year for next year that immigrants can have the right to vote if they've been here for a long period of time. Now, some immigrants think that they can vote now, so they might be going in. They're going to be turned away. And that being turned away now, when their key positions around the governor because of how the ex-governor got, you know, excommunicated. So they're like, well, wait a minute, I'm not voting now. And then it frustrates them. And then they don't go back the next time when they should vote.
Yeah. Listen, I got to make one announcement, but thank you, M. Saidi, for that update in regards to what's happening with the primaries. You know, critically important.
Let's talk next time about the results of what happens.
And, you know, for August, you know, maybe we can actually go ahead and talk to some people in Congress, talk to possibly some other candidates as we get ready for the congressional primary, which is going to be taking place in August, because that's going to be important.
Right.
Definitely.
Okay, and then we'll follow up, you know, in November. But there's primary in September. That's why you got to go now.
No more.
Right. No primary in September.
Right. Okay. Listen, very quickly, on Saturday from 2 to 4, Juneteenth in the case for reparations, UPAMA, the Ujima Pan-African Media Archives, is having a virtual program featuring Dr. Gerald Horn, Don Rojas, and hosted by Bernard White. To get information, you can go to UPAMA, that's UPAMAINC, UPAMAINC.org, and you can register for this virtual online event. It is free. Once again, UPAMA, UPAMAINC.org, UPAMAINC.org. There's Dr. Gerald Horn, Don Rojas. You may remember Brother Don from WBAI and so many other things. And Bernard White, who you definitely, if you listen to WBAI, remember him, who will be hosting. You've been listening to Education at the Crossroads. My name is Basir M. Chawi. I am out of here. We'll be back next week. Peace.
Join WBAI's Freedom Class on Saturday, June 25th. We are inviting all young people and curious adults to learn more about our government. Learn how your Constitution works. Taught by Gloria J. Brown Marshall, host of Law of the Land and other experts. Freedom Class will be online and simulcast on WBAI. Be part of Freedom Class on June 25th, Saturday at 1 p.m. Freedom Class information is on the WBAI website, WBAI.org. Registration for online participation via Zoom is limited, but you can listen to our Freedom Class broadcast Saturday, June 25th at 1 p.m. Come ready to be empowered, inspired, and informed by WBAI's Freedom Class. 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Hey, you can't find that on the radio.
Well, tune in to WBAI and you certainly will get an earful.
You'll turn to that station.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
And you can ensure that WBAI is here for you now and in the future through WBAI's Tower Fund. Go to towerfund.wbai.org and contribute what you can to ensure that the room which houses WBAI's transmitter at 4 Times Square, which costs $17,000 a month, is paid through the coming year. Please go to towerfund.wbai.org or phone 212-209-2950 to help secure WBAI's future.
Hey, 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 hey.
Thank you to all